You're listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. Interesting conversations about innovation, economics, culture, and history for the independent thinkers and curious minds. I'm your host, Alex Wolf. Hello, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Alex Wolf Podcast. Today I want to talk about what we have lost. What we have lost as a society, civilization, as people, in the context of technology. And it's not supposed to be a doom and gloom conversation. I think this can actually be enlightening and somewhat of a fascinating experience. I think loss is something we usually correlate to negativity, but sometimes through realizing what we lose, we can learn, you know, how to get it back if we want it back, or how to appreciate it when we do have it. So the reason why I want to talk about what we have lost is because honestly, this is the question that kept coming up as I started to prioritize tech philosophy in my life and study it. I realized that when we had gained the iPhone, I was asking, you know, we lost the flip phone, and what else did we lose in losing that flip phone? And I'm going to be sharing my story a little bit later about how I tried to reactivate my flip phone and how it led me down to this deeper path of questions about our tech philosophy. I think that I also asked the question, when we gained stories on IG, we lost the little things about Snapchat, right? And I made a video about that. Because it seems like you gain something when there is a new technology. But again, the question we seem to ask after it's too late most of the time is, what did we lose? Again, another example is when we gained Netflix and YouTube and those types of streaming services, we lost the spontaneity of the TV cable experience, which it's not that I think one is better than the other. It's just the fact that we seldom ask what will be lost when we, you know, migrate from this technology to something else, and are some of those things worth keeping? So I know for me, I pay for cable. I actually love cable. It reminds me of my childhood, the sound of it. And it sounds a little silly, but it comforts me in that way. And I also like to discover programming through flipping channels, which Netflix does not provide that experience. I love Netflix too. I mean, it's okay. If I have to choose, mostly it's going to be cable. But the point is that for me, watching TV is less about sitting there and watching one thing and kind of having this like casual flip through experience. And that's what TV has always been about. So I know Netflix is integrating like a shuffle feature, which I think is totally dope. But what I think will be super cool and ironic is that they'll eventually figure out that people want to flip through channels and might integrate that feature as well, because spontaneity is something that humans always have loved. If you think about Instagram stories and the top feature, it's all based on spontaneity, and that's partly why it's so addictive. But we lost a lot when we moved from Netflix to TV, not just the spontaneity, but just the literal infrastructure of the economics of television, of TV business models, of media models, and things like that. Another time this came up, this question of what did we lose, was when we gained, quote unquote, gained texting as the primary form of communication. We lost, many of us lost the phone call. We lost the art of knowing how to have a phone call, knowing what to have a phone call for. And of course, now we have a bunch of people who are terrified of talking on the phone. So that leads me to this baby fat flip phone story. I've told it before. I won't go into all the details. I'll link the time I told it before, which has those details. But long story short, it was a few years ago. I was with one of my girlfriends, and we were trying to text the guy she was like dating or whatever, in the sense that she was trying to figure out what to say and I was trying to help her. And it felt like we were, you know, it felt like we were decoding a bomb. It felt very complicated. It felt so calculated, as far as when to send the text, what to say in the text, what emojis to use, to not use, punctuation. And this was someone she was just meeting for the first time. So we have to think about the impression we're giving. And this is something that I think is very common in millennial culture. I think across the board, but I think specifically for millennials, I'm going to talk about just because I am and I know many of my audiences. And so, you know, there's the part of me that was like, this is stupid. Like, I hate that we have to do this. You know, can't we just grow up and pick up the phone? You know, it was that whole kind of like, whatever happened to XYZ, which is a common thing we say right before we start talking about technology. Whatever happened to the good old days when we used to blah, blah, blah. So I just saw how anxious she was. And I also could empathize with that because I was dating at the time and like going through that as well. And I felt like this anxiety would not just come up with dating, but professionally, just like, oh my God, there's this whole art to knowing how to text. And a lot of it is invisible. A lot of it is in the spaces versus what you're actually saying. When I say that, I mean, again, the timing and when in which things are said, maybe the formatting, the punctuation, right? So, and the reason why texting is usually so tricky is because you're losing inflection, which is very important in communication to read or really understand what someone is trying to say. And it's why texting, in my opinion, is like throwing a monkey wrench in between two people as far as like them communicating. So just the anxiety was just so laughable that it was right before the new year came in. And I told myself, I'm going to get myself a flip phone. And if a guy wants to text me, I'm going to tell him I don't text. I only take calls on my flip phone. Now laugh at me if you want. But I was like, look, this is going to save me so much time. Whoever thought they were about to waste my time, like, it's not even going to happen. And so I was very, very serious. So, of course, I couldn't just get a regular flip phone. I had to get some Divalicious fucking pop pink diamond encrusted baby fat flip phone. So luckily, the internet gods led me to one, and I bought it, and I was so ecstatic, and I tried to get a SIM card. You know, I was just like in awe, drooling at the mouth, literally, playing with it, touching the paint, everything. It was lighting up. It had ringtones on it, and I might activate it so you guys can hear the ringtones, because I think they have like a Get Your Freak On ringtone. Anyway. Nostalgia like crack, right? Like I hit the nostalgia crack 90s like jackpot. So I try to activate the phone. I'm thinking it's going to be simple. The guy at the place tells me that, like, SIM card place tells me that the network that used to communicate front to the SIM card so that it would work, they're like no longer up, like these towers. I guess it was like a, and I don't know the exact term, but think of it like a 2G or 1G, I don't know, relative to like 5G. I don't know if that's what they were called, but the point is like, that's the way to interpret it if you're not familiar with the terms. So he's basically telling me I can't reactivate this phone and I'm going to cry. And he was so dismissive and he had no idea how much it meant to me. So he was kind of like making fun of me and like getting a kick out of like, I don't know, I guess he thought I was just really naive or something, and I wanted to kill him. But I just, you know me, I got super deep about it. I went back to the crib. I'm like psychoanalyzing this whole freaking situation, and I'm like, okay, so basically we abandoned the network that these phones use to communicate because we were so focused on improving or going to this other network, which we're currently at now, but to a point that we felt like it was okay to just get rid of the other one. Like, it wasn't even a question of, will we need this? You know, should we, you know, maybe get rid of some of it, but still have, you know, leave access for some people who want to use it? It was like, nope, the phone itself is useless today because the networks, the towers are no longer in service. And so I didn't give up. I had called some of my like phone, like hardware friends, like people who know about, you know, phones and hardware and machinery stuff. And they were like, yeah, it's not going to work. So it was crazy. And it was just this like smack in the face again of like questioning what is progress, right? So leads me to a Neil Postman story. I've talked about Neil Postman before. He has a very similar story. And I didn't mean to live out his experience, But literally, he has a similar story where it's in the 90s. This is like right where he's about to pass, I think, because he passed away in the 90s. So this is like later in his life. He goes to a car dealership. He tries to buy a new Honda. And he asked the salesman, you know, what's the purpose of the automatic windows? You know, he didn't feel like they were necessary. And one of the questions, he has like a list of questions he asked for ethical analysis when technology is invented. And one of the questions is, what problem does this solve, right? So he asked the salesman about the windows. He's like, what problem does this solve? And the salesman, of course, is like, oh, well, I never really thought about it that way. You know, I guess it's to solve the motion of using your arm to lever the window down. And of course, Neil Postman's like, you know, this is why it's important we ask those questions, because that's, you know, he says, that's never been a problem for me. I've never had an issue rolling my window down with my hand. And he asks, you know, can't I just purchase a car without this automatic feature? I don't see myself wanting this or using this. And the salesman tells him, and this is way deeper than it's going to sound on the surface level, salesman tells him it was the only way cars were being designed from here on out. So he had no choice. The idea of, can I opt out of this specific feature because I don't see how it's going to add value into my life? That's the type of tech sensitivity and tech philosophy that is so, like, you know, not exercised, right? And especially for the car company, the people designing the cars, you know, they're just given orders and they just go. So even though it might seem like, you know, a simple little feature, like what's the big deal? It's just an automatic window. It's the mindset that felt the need to make something like this automatic that is going so fast that it's not questioning what we might lose in this process. Not to say that we lose the end of the world, you know, it's not to say we lose everything because of an automatic feature. We lose everything because of the mindset, because of the philosophy. So what was so brilliant about the scenario, and I think what was sobering for me in my experience with the phone, was that there's this narrative in tech that, well, the more we pursue it, the more options we have. That's something that's said a lot, you know, like, oh, we'll have more, you know, capability to do anything we've done before. But he, through that experience, had questioned, how is this giving me more options if I literally have no choice but to take this kind of car? The idea that you have more options with more tech or more advanced tech is a myth. Because what will happen is the marketplace will shift so aggressively that by the time you figure it out, hey, I don't really need this, you can't find it anymore. You know, you're not going to be able to get that, at least not in the new things. But even again, I went to go buy an old phone to have that old user experience, and the network around it, literally the ecosystem that supported it, is gone. So that tells you, for me, that shows you so much about the philosophy that we have running beneath our economy, running beneath our politics, running beneath our families, our personal values, is that we're going and we get really, kind of seduced by these kind of like, I don't know, illusion type advancements. Like, oh, like, look, the windows go up automatically. Like, I don't know. It kind of, again, it seduces us away from asking, but do we need that? Right? We're so enamored by this new feature that we don't do that ethical analysis. And that's sort of the status quo. So I love that story and I live the story, and maybe you've lived it through your own journey. And you know, you can buy a flip phone today, but I wanted the baby fat one. What can I say? Right. I was like, look, y'all not about to have me with one of these swagless little, you know, flip phones. For me, I wanted that whole experience. So I just decided not to do it, but it was a great story. And I now can, the phone is in my house as art. So, and I think that whenever I bring up old technology, usually the response is like people kind of dive into the nostalgia of it. Like, oh, I remember in da, da, da. And the nostalgia is very fun. And trust me, I get a high just as much. But the real symbolism of that phone is less about the nostalgia, and it's more about the symbol of what we didn't know or what we didn't think about losing. You know, I look at it and I say, wow, we went so fast. And it's funny because, you know, I should come up with a term for this. There's like your mind's eye, but then there's like the millennial mind's eye, where things seem like they weren't as far away as they are. So like the 90s or something like that. So in my mind's eye, I'm thinking the phone, like I didn't really do the math. So just intuitively, I felt like the phone was maybe like 7 years old, but the phone is like 16 years old. And like after I did the math, I just was like, God damn, this is freaking antique. Like this is an old phone, you know? So the fact that it was still in good condition and everything, it was just a very unique experience. Anyway, so that's what that symbolizes. And so now I just want to kind of talk about how some of the things we lose as far as, you know, what are these things, right? They might be skills. They might be techniques. They might be arts, literally arts. So like the art of homemaking or the technique of, you know, fixing a car or the skill of knowing how to communicate. So when I say lose, I just wanted to be a little bit more specific about what those are instead of just saying things. And so some of those are what we lose on an individual level, which we ourselves can work on bringing back. But when the part that gets tricky is that some of the things are collective, which are way harder to cultivate or integrate back into our lives because they depend on the cooperation of people, lots of people. And of course, as you know, that's where it gets sticky. So I think one of the millennial dilemmas is like, I didn't ask for any of this. Like I grew up in a certain technological era and we felt like it would continue, but it kind of like surpass, and now we're in this ecosystem where maybe your values, your arts, your techniques, your skills are not, they don't feel like they're in the right place with this ecosystem, this tech era. Now, I will say that some people do this collectively, and they tend to be, not always, but they tend to be families with strong beliefs, particularly religious beliefs. A lot of religions and a lot of beliefs have tech philosophy deeply ingrained into their values. Some of them don't use technology on certain days of the week. Some of them don't use tech that have specific things like microchips or even like combustible engines. Some don't use certain technology to kill their food. You definitely see this in some Amish families and some Jewish traditions as well. But it's really all over the world. And, you know, I say that to say that tech philosophy is not this new thing, right? It's really an ancient part that has had to be considered by for how structure in a community or a family is going to live. You know, there are communities that say, here is where we stop. Here is where we feel like this cuts into the integrity of where we stand as a family or whatever. And it's just something interesting to think about, because again, when we define technology as the Apple Store, you know, microchips, then you can't really conceptualize the fact that it's an ancient thing and there are ancient beliefs and values around it. So anyway, I think another interesting thing is when, I'm sure you've heard an auntie or maybe an uncle or dad or something say, you know, back in my day, you know, I came from the Stone Age, we didn't even have internet, we didn't even have, you know, whatever. And they usually say something like, I love this line, they'll say, I come from the Stone Age. And for me, that's a reminder. You know, for some, they hear that and they kind of laugh, right? It's a joke. But underneath all that, it's a reminder that our eras are not shaped by our humanity as much as they are shaped by our technology. Because the reality is, we have always been as human as we ever will be. And when I say that, I'm talking about we're emotional, we're irrational, we are flawed. We're also, you know, compassionate. Many of us have kindness, those sincere parts. A lot of us are also sincerely weird, right? Humans are just, we're humans. And I think that it's a great reminder to know that you were just as human as Cleopatra or Napoleon or, you know, whoever you're thinking of in ancient times. But what makes you different, or I guess a better way to put it, is what shapes our differences. If there is a gap between you and, you know, someone in ancient Egypt, the gap is formed, is shaped by the technology that was around them and is around you. And of course, also shapes the economics. You're also shaped by the economics, but the economics are predicated by the technology first, right? And the paradigm of reality that creates. So for example, you know, if we're going back in the day, you know, to get something like salt or spices, probably meant you needed to get a ship to go to another piece of land. And what is a ship? A ship is technology. So all of these things are shaping, you know, to live in a world where an airplane is not even conceivable, that is what makes you different than the people before you. But as far as the hurt, the realness, the heart, the joy, the sorrow, the jealousy, the pettiness, everything that comes with being human, we all the same. We're all the same. So I love that perspective because it makes our ancestors not feel so far. It makes, you know, it makes, I think, our presence come to life a little bit more. And it also shows us how much, how influenced not only we are by technology, but how much influence we have on it as well. So I think the main questions that I wanted to ask that you can just kind of ruminate on and hopefully just find value in having it stimulate your mind are: what techniques, skills, values, and arts are we losing because of blind technophilia? Blind technophilia is a term that I use that it's just like any other philia, where it's an affinity or obsession of. So for in this case, it's tech. And I add the blind because I consider myself a technophiliac, but not a blind one in the sense that I don't pursue tech at any cost, at any means. But again, the mainstream undercurrent, I think, in our culture is blind technophilia. So again, I'm going to ask the question. I'm going to ask it slow so it seeps in. What techniques, skills, values, and arts are we losing because of blind technophilia? Another question is, what techniques, skills, and art are worth preserving? To deepen the question even more, what techniques, skills, values, and arts are connected to preserving us, our humanity? Lord knows if this planet goes to shit, what do you think it's going to be from? Yes, it's going to be from humans, but not just humans. It's going to be something we create, some type of technology we create. Guess what? What creates the technology? Some kind of tech philosophy, some kind of perspective about, oh, well, I think tech should do this. Well, we should do this. Well, have you thought it out? I have a talk where I give 4 qualifiers of human-friendly technology, and one of them is called a harmonious tech to technique ratio. And you can check out the whole video if you want, but in a nutshell, that specific qualifier is about how technology is not alone. It needs a human to operate it. And that operation is called technique. So the easiest way to think about technique is your hairdresser is maybe the way your mom cooks a certain meal. The point is that you can give different people the same tools, the same technology, but they might whip up a whole different thing. And the technique is what adds the humanity to the finished product. So for example, in capitalism right now, what you're seeing is a lot of people want to buy things that aren't mass reproduced, right? So you go on Etsy to get something that's been made not a million times, because when something is made a million times, that lets you know that it's being made with a heavy hand of machinery. Now, what gives something that extra essence is the human touch technique. So that's something to think about, because many techniques are being lost in the name of, well, a machine can do that. In the name of, well, we can do this cheaper if blah, blah, blah. Fashion's being hit with this hard, right? But there's still definitely people sewing in fashion, but they've, again, they're putting that heavy hand of machinery. So as much as they can delegate to robots, they're going to do. I'm not saying that's evil. I'm saying, what techniques, skills, and values and arts are connected to preserving our humanity? And is that one of them? In Attention for Sale, which is my mini doc about how advertisement business models exploit our eyeballs to profit, exploit our inability to look away, exploit our physiology, okay? This is not about, oh, let me try to really sell something someone wants to them. No, this is about, let me jolt you into a psychoactive state that is going to make you attracted to this. It's very different, okay? So I say that to say that, sorry, there are certain arts. The whole point of that documentary is that, well, what do we lose? What do we lose when y'all decide that it's totally okay to distract and jolt and physiologically exploit anyone you can find? And at this point, it's billions of people who use social media sites and use those types of advertisement business models for their entertainment. What do we lose, right? Our attention span? Could we have used our attention span this year? Could we have used our attention span 4 years before this to prevent this kind of year, right? So, and yeah, I think technique is something I'm very, very, to me, there is no tech without technique. And when I say there should be a harmonious tech to technique ratio, I know it's a mouthful, but it's something I'm sure you can understand. When the technology is burdened with the utility, so what that means is, the example I gave in the video, when something like a microwave was invented, it was to burden the technology with this utility of cooking, so that the only technique the human had to have was to click the button, beep, beep. And what I say is that right now we're trying to buttonify everything, so that you don't even know how much technique is worth, because you don't ever have to be put in a position to use it until shit gets real. And my whole question is, how real do y'all want shit to get before you start to care? Y'all want to be a population that doesn't know how to communicate? Y'all want to be a population that doesn't have an attention span, that can't do simple survival skills? Y'all want to be a population that doesn't have certain, again, techniques, arts, values, skills that preserve what make us human? What are y'all trying to do? Make us into robots? That's what it looks like to me. This tech philosophy looks like it's trying to rip my heart out and take out every little thing that makes me human and take out every little thing that makes everyone else human. So again, the question is, what techniques, what skills, what values, what arts are worth preserving as an insurance, as a support system to what makes us wholesome, to our meaning, to our survival? And the other question is, have you realized how nuanced they are? Have you realized how invisible they are? Have you realized what you've lost because it's been so subtle in your life? And now you're realizing how much that subtlety made a world of a difference for you. Another question is, have you realized how intuitive they are? So to give you an example, we see this a lot in cooking, in construction, in creating clothes, in gardening, right? There's techniques in cooking. You know, it's funny. I found this girl on YouTube. She's hilarious. And she gives you a recipe like you're a girlfriend. I'll link to it. She gives you a recipe like you're her girlfriend right there in the kitchen. And me and my friend Tracy were laughing at her because Tracy was like, you know, her recipes aren't like neat. They aren't in like a neat little, you know, chart list. And I was like, that's how I like it, because that's how cooking has always been passed down. You think, you know, grandma was teaching you, she might have written some things down, but we all know what good cooks don't measure. Good cooks are not. It's a completely intuitive process. And Lord, nothing brights me up more than to have that intuitive moment. I think if you don't like it in cooking, you'll find it in something else. But the point is, it's not this like instruction manual, right? So much of it is like, it will tell you what it wants. It will tell you when it's ready. You have to be sensitive to what is really going on here. And again, you find that in construction. You find that in engineering. You find that in chemistry. You find that in fashion. Oh, fashion is another one. I'm like, oh. Because fabrics have a whole personality. Fabrics will tell you everything. Okay, well, I want to drape like this, and I want to flare out like this, and I want to, you know, I want to be this color. I want to be next to this fabric. Like, you know, it sounds crazy if you're not someone who's sensitive to fashion, but if you do have that sensitivity and that intuition, well, by God, then you get the calls where you're like, this person has the technique and the skill and the art, even the values, that makes this person light up. The recent editorial that Cardi did on Billboard brought tears into my eyes. The contour of those fabrics and the vision of it has very little to deal with Cardi B and more to deal with that sensitivity that I know those people have to create this marvel. Marvels. We'll talk about that another day. But marvel is something very different than just sensationalized visual. A marvel is something that your eye, it's a treat. It's like a dessert for your eye. It's not like porn for your eye, because that's what I think, again, we got to draw the line between a marvel and something that is exploiting your eye, something that's going, that's pushing that dopamine threshold, and something that's just stimulating it. So it's different for everyone, but whatever. I say all this to say that when we ask ourselves the question, have we realized how nuanced they are? Because you might ask yourself the question, okay, what do we lose? And you might be like, I don't know, because it's something as little as the way your grandma used to rub your back, right? And then you're in there and you're like, well, according to our calculations, it's what we lost is the way grandmas rub our backs. Well, when you say it out loud, you don't get it unless you've already felt it. Right? Unless you've already felt not just the presence of it, but the absence. That's when you're like, oh my God, that's what made the difference. I'm watching The Sopranos right now, and I'm not going to get into the story too much, but basically someone who used to dress up as Santa every year is not dressing up as Santa this year because he's gone. And it's a great way to show this grief they have for this character, because the whole point is you could give two men Santa suits, but unless one of them has this art with it or skill with it or technique with it, it's not going to produce the same energy. So the point is, the tech is never the tech, and the human is not just the human. It's this relationship. And it's harder to see when the tech is like super manipulated as something that's super complex in the sense that is advanced compared to something a little bit more down to earth. So like what I'm saying is you don't see the relationship as clearly with a human and an iPhone as much as you see it like a human and a spoon, like that, because that has such an older relationship. But the point is that it's humans have never just been humans just chilling on the planet. We've always have needed the tech to freaking live. Because the tech is coming out of what? Our brains, our minds are like, hey, if I put this shit next to this shit, and this is why I love engineers, because they're just as sophisticated and beautiful as artists. Hey, if y'all wanna live, let's go into this cave. Let's use this fabric to cover ourselves. Here's how to make it here's how to make our lives even more meaningful when we can make shoes. And now it's, oh, we're going to make this table so we can eat in a more meaningful way. Right. I don't know where we are now. And that kind of brings me into the next and kind of what I want to end this with is, first of all, where are we going right now? Like, let's just pretend if we go as far as we can with this tech philosophy, what does it really look like? In my opinion, it looks like if you pursue our culture's mainstream tech philosophy to the point where it's going to get you, it's going to desensitize you through the exploitation of the senses. And you'll end up in a perfectly temperatured room with a big screen and buttons that trade some kind of digital currency to give you pretty much anything you desire and is designed to avoid any inconvenience. AKA human interaction is one of the big ones, one of the big inconveniences. And I mean, look around, that's pretty much where we are now. I think it can be kind of pushed to different limits. So there's a Black Mirror episode. I'm not really a fan of Black Mirror just because it's not sci-fi for me. It's just reality. And this being case in point, that there's an episode where one of the people live in this like room that's built with screens, and the screens are, you know, mostly porn. They're exploiting his senses with these very, very sensationalized images. And he has to be on this like bicycle, like, you know, not a real bicycle, but one that's kind of like bolted into the ground. And that's how he gets this digital currency, and he uses this digital currency to kind of get all his conveniences. And, you know, look, I think it's not all bad, but the point is, the question was, what skills and arts and values are connected to preserving our humanity? Where it's like, yes, you can live in this world and you can have all these conveniences, but are you keeping what makes you human? Like, yes, it's all great, it's all convenient, but what is going to warm your heart, right? It's usually going to, you know, they have all these studies now. What dictates the quality of your life? It's never been money. It's never been materialistic things. It's always been your relationships with other humans, which are the epitome of inconvenience, in the sense that not that people should be inconveniences like deliberately, but just naturally being a human, you know, raising kids, being in a partnership, working with other people. I'm not even just saying like, oh, humans are a pain in the ass. I'm just saying that like, even when you're not a pain in the ass, there are inconveniences involved. So, you know, where are we going? People want to, oh, Alex, what do you think of this? What do you think? I'm just like, where are y'all going? Y'all want to send me the new thing, Elon Musk? And where y'all? Oh, Bezos, he's going to space. Where are you going? Where are you going? Why are you going to space? You know, and I do appreciate what Bezos has done, and I do appreciate Amazon. But when we start talking about space, I'm like, you watch too many Star Wars movies. I'm sorry, that's really what I think. I'm like, oh, you think the world is just, you know, Hollywood. You think, oh, I can just, you know, I'm like, we're in outer space, as Alan Watts likes to say. We're as far out as we're ever going to get. We're in outer space. We're floating in air. Where are y'all going? So, okay. So, yeah, I think that if we pursue our tech philosophy now, all it's going to do is create this false illusion that inconveniences are something that, first of all, we think we are entitled to remove completely, and it's all just an illusion. Y'all know the quote. If you've heard me, I've said this before. Henry David Thoreau says, all our inventions are an improved means to an unimproved end. You cannot invent out the human condition. And if you try, all you're going to do is turn those humans into emotionally incapable shells. You know, you can't, like, it, why would you want to? I think on a more ironic note, you know, some of those exact inconveniences we might be trying to get rid of are the exact ones we need to develop character. to mature, to be, to strengthen. Look around. Strength is a very natural part of nature. You know what I mean? And strength doesn't mean, it's not brute. It's not forced. Strength just means strength. Strength, a spider web is strong. You know what I'm saying? When we hear strength, we think, you know, big old strong man. No, strength can be a spider web. It could be a little dandelion in the ground. You know what I mean? So here we are trying to get rid of the inconveniences. And then, of course, once you pursue that so much, you realize, oh my God, this culture can't stand anything. It can't handle anything. You know, we become so far removed from nature, from the earth, right? So I'll end with this quote. I've said it before, but it's a great place to stop, pun intended. And the quote, who I heard Alan Watts say it, but I know he was referencing someone else. So shout out to whoever said it. The quote is, progress is knowing when to stop. We really have this idea that progress is, like I talked about last week, growth, 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 go higher, higher, higher. Everyone's trying to go higher. Look around. Nothing grows like that. Everything has its contribution, right? So progress is knowing when to, when it's the answer to that question I said before of what arts, techniques, what are the, what, which ones will preserve what makes us human? Which ones will preserve a life worth living? Because again, you watch the Black Mirror episode and you're like, yeah, okay, this is cool. You just, all right, hang out and do this. And okay, yeah, life is there's little inconvenience, but the big underbelly, the big inconvenience hiding under that is the fact that you're not alive. You're not really alive. You're not smelling the goddamn flowers. You're not having human interaction. Your heart is not feeling love. It's not feeling even the sorrow, right? Because you can't have good without the bad. But the point is, like, the tech philosophy y'all want to pursue creates a world where it's like, why would I even want to be here? What is the point of, when it comes to attention for sale, that premise of like the advertisement specifically? And mind you, I love ads. Again, to me, I see there's nuance, right? When the ad is just about exploiting your senses, what good is it to even build a company in a world where no one has an attention span? I'm like, don't you see how, you know, again, it's going back to when you sharpen your knife too much, it dulls. It might even be worse than what you started with. So progress is knowing when to stop. It's a way of saying, okay, we've sharpened the knife. To continue would be to begin our demise. And I know some people are going to hit me up and say, okay, well, Alex, where do you think we should have stopped? I think, again, the reason why I was saying about the individualism and collectivism is there are ways that you as an individual can preserve arts, techniques, skills, which is something I practice, right? That's why I'm doing my homemaking. That's one of my favorite arts I want to preserve, cooking, blah, blah, blah. So I would say figure out what works for you. But as far as collectively, oh, honey, I don't got the answers for that. I'm watching the Twitter feed unfold just as much as you are. I'm doom scrolling like y'all as far as like, okay, well, I don't know. Y'all want to go to space. Y'all want to do this. Microchips in the brain. Where are y'all going? We're here. This is it. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I have to say for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I really appreciate your tweets and your messages and emails. I love y'all. Y'all are great. Yeah, it's a great audience to please and to have my thoughts with, because y'all are very smart and interesting people. So Thank you. And until next time, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And if you aren't already, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more resources on innovation, economics, and culture, visit alexwolf.co/newsletter and sign up for my email list. Thanks.